You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place!
About destruction, don't you know that you can count me out? Don't you know it's gonna be alright? Alright. Alright.
I'll read you an email. What do they want us to sign? Put it on the table. We'll sign it. I agree with you, Mac. If they'll throw the nukes away, what do you want us to sign? Do you want us to transfer the Baseball Hall of Fame from Cooperstown to Pyongyang? We'll be happy to do that. What do you want? Put it on the table. We don't want to invade you. We don't want any part of you. Just get rid of the nukes, all right? Get rid of the nukes. Good point. Good point. Okay, so here's the next question. The other deterrent was his conventional deterrent north of Seoul. At some point, do we begin to discuss that? Because that was a big deal. That's a big deal. Before he had a nuclear, he had a similar capability conventionally, which is to blow everything up conventionally. Which, so even before the nuclear event, he had a non-nuclear event that was looking very much like a nuclear event. Yeah. So, all right, let's see what John Bolton had to say. He's always good for, supposedly he's kind of trying to reinvent his image. He doesn't want to be kind of the Darth Vader, that guy. He didn't want to be that guy anymore. Okay. So supposedly he's trying to be a little more thoughtful, a little bit more, you know, judicious about the things he says in public. Blah, 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 blah. So we'll see.
This week, the quote, any nation that helps.
This is with Jake Tapper.
Nuclear weapons could also be strongly sanctioned by the United States. Is the United States going to sanction European companies that do business with Iran?
I think the issue here is what the Europeans are going to do. If they're going to see that it's not in their interest to stay in the deal, we're going to have to watch what the Iranians do. They'd love to stay in the deal. Why shouldn't they? They got everything they wanted from the Obama administration. But I think the Europeans will see that it's in their interest ultimately to come along with us.
With all due respect, I've been speaking to European diplomats, and that's not the impression I get.
Well, that's not the impression now.
They say they're going to stay in the deal.
And they may try to do so, in part because I think despite the complete consistency of President Trump in his opposition to the deal, opposed to it as candidate Trump, opposed to it as President-elect Trump, opposed to it as President Trump, many people, including apparently former Secretary of State John Kerry, thought that we never would get out of it. Now, I don't know how to explain why people could miss what the president was saying. So I think at the moment there's some feeling in Europe that they're really surprised we got out of it, really surprised at the reimposition of strict sanctions. I think that will sink in, and we'll see what happens then. The president's very clear. He wants to discuss the larger threat posed by Iran around the region. And this is what he discussed with President Macron. He's talked about it with Chancellor Merkel. He's talked about it with Prime Minister May. Not just Iran's nuclear threat now, the threat in the future. the ballistic missile programs and the instability that Iran is causing around the region.
But with all due respect, I didn't get an answer to the question. Is the U.S. going to impose sanctions on European companies that continue to do business with Iran?
I think I did give the answer.
Well, you
said
we'll see.
The answer is it's possible. It depends on the conduct of other governments.
Jake Tapper, getting to the bottom of it with John Bolton. The now I want to play a little bit of Mike Pompeo on Fox News. The what wouldn't you sign? Here's another email. Why just the Baseball Hall of Fame? Send a football, basketball, does soccer have a Hall of Fame? Do any of our female sports have a Hall of Fame? Send them all over there, for God's sakes. What does he want? I agree with the last email. What does that guy want? Find out what he wants and give it to him yesterday. Are you listening to me? Yesterday. Look, we'll send all of our surplus food in print. In parentheses, Max, that's a good idea. It helps the farmers out. We're not shipping there right now. It takes that stuff off the market and does something good relative to national security. Ever thought about getting involved with the State Department? No, I haven't. But I know how it works, man. I know how it works. Yeah, look, every bit of surplus food that we're not giving to UNICEF, we'll give to you. Okay? We're not going to dump it on the open market. It just drives the price down. We'll send it to you. We'll even pay our farmers for it and throw that. We'll throw that in the deal for you too. Extra corn, you got it. Extra flour, wheat, you got that too. You ever eat wheat? It's good. Do you, yeah. We'll give it all to you. All right, here's Mike Pompeo. Yesterday on Fox.
Pompeo and the South Korean foreign minister said that the goal of the summit is the complete, permanent, verifiable, and irreversible denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula.
How do you make it irreversible? Do we make that site irreversibly, right, so that, because you can't make it, okay, so that's not reversible. So you have to focus on the term irreversible. Okay. So any of this stuff that's been a part of the program has to be destroyed. What he does in the future, he could regenerate the program. That's for sure. Certainly wouldn't take him very long if he wanted to. And I bet you he has a little binder sitting there called Program Regeneration. How long would it take us to build a test site in the mountain? And then number two, we don't really need this test site except when we begin to develop bigger atomic devices. Okay. So I've got that part of the technology worked. All I got to do is manufacture. Well, we can do that. Might take us a couple years, but come on. That's not that long in diplomatic years, right? So he's got what he needs. He can reconstitute. Irreversible? Okay, that means those facilities can't be used again, but I can always build new ones.
They said there was no daylight between the two allies when they held a press conference just moments ago at the State Department. Pompeo was asked about his impression of Kim Jong-un, a brutal dictator with whom few other than the president of South Korea has spent as much time.
Our conversations were warm. We were each representing our two countries, trying our best to make sure that we were communicating clearly, that we had a shared understanding about what our mutual objectives were, but we had good.
This is called putting a smiley face on an interview, okay?
Conversations about the histories of our two nations, the challenges that we've had between us.
Warmest.
The, yeah, you know what? You have to be kind of careful when you talk about Kim. What are you going to say? I mean, the president had to, you know, he's having to do it, right? Before you meet with him, and let me just tell you, If you didn't think politics was horrible, you know, Chuck Schumer, good God, man, have some pride. He was against the deal, right? The Iran nuclear deal. He was against it. And then when the president, you know, nukes the deal, when the president nukes the nuke deal, which I thought was kind of humorous, When he does that, what do you think Schumer just ruins him for it? And then they start rolling out videotape of Schumer's opposition to it. It's just like, are you kidding me? Don't you have any pride?
And joining us,
this is the actual 15-minute interview with Mike Pompeo on Fox News yesterday. So we're going to listen to a little bit of it. There's a story also in Stars and Stripes about, I want to play the Kelly audio for you too. Okay. I want to play Pompeo and then you'll probably hear Kelly.
Now, the new and very busy Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo. Mr. Secretary, welcome back to Fox
News. That's Chris Wallace with Fox News Sunday.
News Sunday.
Good morning, Chris. It's great to be with you.
Let's start with breaking news. First of all, that savage attack last night in Paris, a Chechen knifing, killing one person, wounding four others. What can you tell us about a possible link to terror?
We don't know much more. We know that the caliphate, ISIS, has claimed responsibility. They said he was one of their soldiers. We can't verify that yet. The French authorities, with all the intelligence help the United States can provide, will do our best to unpack this in the coming hours.
Okay, let's talk about some other breaking news. The North Koreans announced yesterday that they are going to blow up their nuclear site in 10 to 12 days. How big a development is this? And is that, do we believe, their only nuclear test site?
Chris, it's good news. Every single site that the North Koreans have that can inflict risk upon the American people, that is destroyed, eliminated, dismantled, is good news for the American people and for the world. And so this is one step along the way. I had a good set of meetings this past week aimed at heading in exactly this direction.
I want to go back to the comment, and Kevin just played it, your comment on Friday that if Kim chooses the, quote, right path, the U.S. is prepared to work with North Korea to, quote, achieve prosperity. What does that mean in terms of direct U.S. investment in North Korea? And are we, as part of this, willing, in effect, to guarantee Kim's security, that regime change will be off the table?
Chris, here's what this will look like. This will be Americans coming in, private sector Americans, not the U.S. taxpayer. Private sector Americans coming in to help build out the energy grid. They need enormous amounts of electricity in North Korea to work with them to develop infrastructure, all the things that the North Korean people need, the capacity for American agriculture to support North Korea so they can eat meat and have healthy lives. Those are the kind of things that if we get what it is the president has demanded, the complete, verifiable, irreversible denuclearization of North Korea, that the American people will offer in spades.
And as part of that, are we in effect saying to Kim, if you give us what we want, you can stay on in power?
We will have to provide security assurances to be sure. This has been the trade-off that has been pending for 25 years. No president has ever put America in a position where the North Korean leadership thought that this was truly possible, that the Americans would actually do this, would lead to the place where America was no longer held at risk by the North Korean regime. That's the objectives. When I said earlier this week that I think Chairman Kim shares the objectives of the American people, I'm convinced of that. Now the task is for President Trump and he to meet to validate the process by which this would go forward, to set out those markers so that we can negotiate this outcome.
Do you have any problem giving Kim's history and the history of his family as an oppressive regime any problems with the idea of the U.S., even if we get our deal, in effect giving a security guarantee to the Kim regime?
Look, we'll have to see how the negotiations proceed, but make no mistake about it. America's interest here is preventing the risk that North Korea will launch a nuclear weapon into L.A. or Denver or into the very place we're sitting here this morning, Chris. That's our objective. That's the end state the president has laid out, and that's the mission that he sent me on this past week, to put us on the trajectory to go achieve that.
Let's talk about denuclearization, the objective. 2 weeks ago...
Okay, pay attention now. Get your note-taking material out.
National Security Advisor.
What does that mean to the North Koreans? Supposedly, it doesn't mean U.S. troops off the peninsula. What does it mean?
John Bolton sat in this very seat, and he told me that the U.S. negotiating position going in is that Kim has to ship out, has to dismantle and take out of the country all of his nuclear weapons, all of his nuclear infrastructure, all of his long-range missiles before the U.S. will grant any concessions. On the other hand, this week, Kim met with Chinese President Xi, and he called for, quote, phased and synchronous measures. In other words, action for action. Have you and Kim agreed what the sequencing is? Is it all of the actions by him first, or is it step by step? And is that something, as I say, that you've agreed with, or is it something that Kim and the president will have to work out at the summit?
Chris, we've had discussions on how this would proceed. There's still a great deal of detail to be worked on, and in the coming weeks, we will continue to work on that so that we can be in a good spot on June 12th in Singapore for President Trump. But make no mistake about it, we've done this before, right? We've done trade for trade, moment for moment, you give me X, I give you Y, and it has failed repeatedly. I think Chairman Kim understands that. I think he appreciates the fact that this is going to have to be different and big and special and something that has never been undertaken before. If we're going to get to this historic outcome, both sides have to be prepared to take truly historic measures to achieve it.
And how confident are you? Because you're going to be putting the President of the United States in a room with Kim in Singapore with the whole world watching. How confident are you that not only he understands it, but that he's going to have to, that he's going to deliver on our expectations?
Well, the quote, President Trump, we'll see. Right? We are not to the place yet where we should be remotely close to declaring that we've achieved what it is we want. There's a great deal of work that remains. Our eyes are wide open with respect to the risks. But it is our fervent hope that Chairman Kim wants to make a strategic change. A strategic change in the direction for his country and his people. And if he's prepared to do that, President Trump is prepared to assure that this could be a successful transition.
All right. I want to talk about that. You've said
this is, to me, the most important thing that I've seen the President Kim talk about, and that is the trajectory of his country. This is, to me, the part that's legitimate. Does he want to be seen as a transformational leader? Because he can, if he wants to do this dance with the United States, he runs the risk of war that he'll lose, and then he's out of business, right? I think the Hussein family from Iraq, formerly from Iraq, can tell you that that's a bad thing to do. The better thing to do is, you know, is he a third world country? He might be a fourth world country. You know, so if he could become a third world country, that would be a good thing for him, right? It would raise everybody's boat. Is that what he wants to do? So this is, to me, the part that I think is interesting.
And that we understand, and John Bolton talked about that nobody in the administration is starry-eyed. The president has been raising expectations for this summit, saying he thinks that they're going to make a great deal, that his phrase. Your predecessor at the CIA, John Brennan, says he thinks that's playing into Kim's hands. Take a look.
I think that we're going to have a success. I think this will be a very big success.
I think he has been masterful in how he has manipulated perceptions and how he's manipulated and, quite frankly, duped Mr. Trump.
Is it a mistake for the president to predict a, quote, great success?
I think former Director Brennan's remarks are silly. On their face. We're going to enter into a set of discussions with two nations doing their best to achieve outcomes for their own people that are consistent with their objectives and goals. I think we now understand that there is the potential that there are shared objectives, and our mission is to prepare the groundwork. And we're pretty far along the way in doing so, and we'll continue to work in the days ahead, 30 left, to prepare for June 12th. So the president can have a successful outcome, that the two of them can meet and see if there is sufficient overlap so that we can achieve the ultimate objective for the American people.
After you brought the American hostages home and the whole world celebrated that, President Trump praised Kim for releasing them, and that praise, not the release of the hostages, but that praise upset some critics. Take a look at this.
Kim Jong-un did a great service to himself, to his country, by doing this.
We can't be fooled into giving the North Korean regime credit for returning Americans that never should have been detained in the first place.
According to your State Department's latest report, North Korea still holds at least 80,000 political prisoners in its labor camps and other facilities. Is human rights an issue in this summit, or is it just going to be about the nuclear issue?
Yeah, Chris, this administration is always concerned about human rights. It's the case. Not only are there political prisoners that remain in North Korea, there are Americans held around the world by other rogue regimes, too. I can assure you, this administration, I saw it in my role as director of the CIA, and I've seen it now in my first 2.5 weeks as Secretary of State, is intently focused on achieving the return of each of those as well. We had a success this week. We're happy for those families and for America that those three Americans returned home. But we recognize there's much work to do. We still have Americans held, and we're working diligently on behalf of each and every one of them.
When people found out that you were going to be on the program today, they all had the same question. I must say I did. What is Kim like? With the possible exception of Dennis Rodman, you have spent more time with him than any other Westerner, at least 2.5 hours, the way I figure it. What is he like? Give us any kind of personal insight. How aware is he of what President Trump has been saying? Was there any mention of Little Rocket Man?
Well, I've got a lot fewer rebounds than Dennis Rodman, but I did get to spend a great deal of time with Chairman Kim. The conversations are professional. He knows his brief. He knows what he is trying to achieve for the North Korean people. He's able to deal with complexity when the conversation requires it. He does follow the Western press. He'll probably watch this show at some point. He's paying attention to things that the world is saying. He, too, is preparing for June 12th. He and his team will be working with them to put our two leaders in a position where it's just possible we might pull off a historic undertaking.
Was there any mention of the exchange of insults back and forth?
No, we didn't cover that, Chris.
That's probably wise. I want to turn to, there's a lot on your brief. Iran and Israel got into an armed conflict across the Syrian border this week after President Trump pulled out of the nuclear deal with Tehran. Do you think that there's any connection, that Iran feels less constrained now that the U.S. no longer is part of this this deal about Iran nukes?
That's ludicrous. It's ludicrous to suggest that Iran feels less constrained when during the JCPOA they have now fired missiles into an airport where Americans travel each day in Riyadh. They've now fired missiles into Israel. To suggest that somehow the withdrawal from the JCPOA is driving the Iranian conduct that's taken place during the JCPOA in Yemen, the rise of Hezbollah, all of those things took place during the JCPOA. Indeed, I would argue that they felt they could act with impunity. They watched Europe put exactly zero sanctions on their missile program during the JCPOA. I think Rouhani and Zarif need to explain why it's the case that while this agreement was in place, Iran continued its march across the Middle East.
President Trump made it clear that he's not only going after Iran, but he's also prepared to sanction European companies that continue to do business in Tehran. Here is the president.
We will be instituting the highest level of economic sanction. Any nation that helps Iran in its quest for nuclear weapons could also be strongly sanctioned by the United States.
But the leaders of France, of Germany, of Britain all say that they're going to stay in the deal and they're going to look for a way to protect European companies that continue to do business. The question is, how hard is the Trump administration prepared to go after European companies that ignore the U.S. pulling out?
Two things, Chris. First, the wealth that was created in Iran as a result of the JCPOA drove Iranian malign activity. It fueled Qasem Soleimani. It fueled the IRGC. It provided resources for their work in Syria and Iraq. President Trump's withdrawal is aimed at denying them that wealth, denying them the resources to continue their bad behavior, to take the money away from them. The withdrawal wasn't aimed at the Europeans. I worked hard over the short time I've been the Secretary of State to try and fix the deal. We couldn't reach agreement with our E3 partners. I am hopeful in the days and weeks ahead we can come up with a deal that really works, that really protects the world from Iranian bad behavior, not just their nuclear program, but their missiles and their malign behavior as well. And I'll be working closely with the Europeans to try and achieve that, Chris.
But what about if the European companies and the European countries say, look, there's not going to be a renegotiation any more than there's going to be a renegotiation of the Paris Climate Accord. Is the U.S. prepared to go after companies in our allies like Britain, France, and Germany if they try to continue to do business?
The sanctions regime that is now in place is very clear about what the requirements are. My mission that I've been given by President Trump is to work to strike a deal that achieves the outcomes that protect America. That's what we're going to do, and I'll be hard at it with the Europeans in the next several days.
Couple of final questions. Israel. The U.S. opens its embassy in Jerusalem tomorrow. The Palestinians are talking about a day of rage, violent mass protests, and the PLO won't even talk to the U.S. anymore as an interlocutor in terms of the Middle East. Is the peace process dead? And given the threat of violence, what are you, as the Secretary of State, saying to Americans in the Middle East and those parts of the world over the next few days?
So the peace process is most decidedly not dead. We're hard at work on it. We hope we can achieve a successful outcome there as well. With respect to security, we're aware of the situation on the ground. The United States government has taken a number of actions to ensure that not only our governmental interests, but the American people in that region are secure as well, and we're comfortable. We've taken action that reduces that risk.
Finally, and it's pretty remarkable given all that's happened, all that's on your brief, you have been Secretary of State for barely 2 weeks now. What's your vision for the State Department?
Well, first, Chris, I hope I haven't peaked in my first 2 weeks. But it's pretty clear. We've got to go put the diplomatic team on the playing field. It should be the United States State Department that is at the front of American foreign policy, delivering solutions to solve America's problems without resort to military force. And so I'm going to build the team. We're going to get our swagger back, and the State Department will be out in front in every corner of the world leading America's diplomatic policy, achieving great outcomes on behalf of President Trump and America.
Secretary Pompeo, thank you. Thanks for your time and a very busy schedule.
Well done, Mike Pompeo. You know, the question is, I mean, do you just and it's, we talked about this last week with A. Merkel, okay? What other card does she play? She doesn't have a military card to play. The only card she plays is economic. And Germany is not doing good things. Germany is doing bad things. And so at some point we need regime change in Germany too. We need A. Merkel and her liberal, you know, part of the conservative party to go away. Yeah. Yeah, it's not a good thing. It is not a good thing. And so I don't, because again, peace through strength. So Mike Pompeo with Chris Wallace yesterday. I want to play one more piece of audio. I want you to hear. This is an interview kind of clipped in here that General Kelly did with NPR. Now Kelly's got a lot of blowback on this. Okay. He's got a lot of blowback on comments he made about the people that come that are coming to the United States, their educational background, their job possibilities in the United States. So here's John Kelly. It's just about 7 minutes. Don't touch that dial.
General John Kelly is at the center of what is
NPR.
The most turbulent presidential administration in modern times. A decorated four-star Marine Corps general with four decades in the service, he serves as chief of staff in the Trump White House. NPR's John Burnett sat down with John Kelly in his office at the White House yesterday for an exclusive interview. John joins me in the studio this morning. Hey, John.
Hey, Rachel.
So General Kelly doesn't give a lot of on-the-record interviews. How did this come to be?
Well, I knew General Kelly from 2003. He was a brigadier general in the 1st Marine Division during the invasion of Iraq when I was an embedded reporter, and he was our daily battle briefer. So here we are 15 years later. He's 68 now, retired from the Marine Corps. He joined the administration to lead the Department of Homeland Security.
Right.
And Trump was so impressed with the immigration crackdown and the fall off in border crossings that he tapped Kelly, then only 6 months into the job, to come to the White House. We were sitting at his conference table in his office in the West Wing of the White House. There was a world map on his wall and a model of the Iwo Jima Memorial in the room. He was in a blue suit, red striped tie with a plastic watch.
So John Kelly, largely believed to have been brought into the White House because it was swirling in chaos, especially in those early months. Mm-hmm. There have been reports.
I don't know about plastic watch, though. Come on. Plastic watch? Maybe it was a running watch. Okay. Plastic? Come on, man.
Many months since that the president hasn't been so keen on the ways that Kelly's tried to bring more order to the West Wing, controlling who gets access to the president, for example, or vetting information that makes it to the Oval Office. What did Kelly have to say about his relationship with the president?
Well, I asked him about that.
Do you have any regrets about taking this job 9 months ago?
First of all, I didn't get a vote. And it took a $30,000 a year cut to take this job from what I was doing at DHS. And I say that only because I'm one of the probably the few people around here that isn't really rich at my age anyways. You know, the sense of duty. It was clear from my perch at DHS that the White House was less organized than our president deserved. So when he said, I really need you to come down, what do you say? I came down.
You seriously considered leaving?
No. There's times of great frustration, mostly because of the stories I read about myself or others that I think the world of and wonder if it's worth it to be subjected to that. But then I grow up and suck it up.
Kelly actually told me this job is the hardest thing he's ever done in his life. But he said he thinks the president is, quote, a super smart guy, quick study on trade, taxes, and business. I asked him if there was anything he would have done differently in the job.
In retrospect, I wish I had been here from day one.
How so?
Well, because in terms of staffing or serving the president, that first 6 months was pretty chaotic. And there were people hired that maybe shouldn't have been hired. Now, it's not that things were a disaster that first 6 months, but I believe they could have been better.
So Kelly says he spends an enormous amount of time with Donald Trump. He says 5 to 8 hours a day, more time with the president than anyone outside of Trump's own family.
Wow.
I asked Kelly what he does the rest of his day. He says he starts at 5:30 in the morning reading the news on the ride from his home in Manassas, Virginia, to the White House. He ends it 15 hours later, usually with a glass of what he calls cheap red wine.
So, I mean, the Trump White House obviously is wrestling with a number of high-profile controversies, in particular the Russia investigation. What did he have to say there?
Right. Kelly made clear he can't comment directly on the investigation because that's being handled by outside legal counsel, but he definitely... the White House definitely feels the weight of the Russia probe.
The president keeps calling the Russian investigation a witch hunt. Do you think it's a witch hunt against the president?
From what I read in the newspaper, something that has gone on this long without any real meat on the bone, it suggests to me that there is nothing there relative to our president.
Is there a cloud because of it hanging over this White House?
Well, yeah, you know, there may not be a cloud, but certainly the president is somewhat embarrassed, frankly, when world leaders come in. You know, Bibi Netanyahu is here, and who's under investigation himself. And it's like you walk in and, you know, the first couple of minutes of every conversation might revolve around that kind of thing.
Well, that's a pretty revealing comment. I mean, we don't think of President Trump as being someone who gets embarrassed about a whole lot, but it's clearly affecting his interactions with world leaders, according to Kelly. It was a pretty wide-ranging interview.
He clarified that. He walked it back from embarrassing. I can't remember what the other word he used. But he kind of took back embarrassing at a subsequent comment.
The wide-ranging conversation. You also asked John Kelly about the upcoming summit between President Trump and North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un. What do you have to say there?
Yeah, exactly. And then it was announced right before our interview about the meeting that will take place in Singapore 4 weeks from now. Here's our exchange.
How can you be sure that he's not going to trick you, that you've been down this road so many times before and there have been disappointments with that country?
Not sure. But this president's got his eyes wide open. Believe me, the president really wants this to work. We talk fairly frequently about nuclear weapons, and he's just astounded that the United States, that the human race, could have gotten itself into this dilemma with all of these nuclear weapons. And, you know, as he says, to help North Korea give up its nuclear program and its missile program would be a wonderful thing.
I mean, as you noted, before John Kelly came to the White House, he was chief at Homeland Security for 6 months. And in that post, he really presided over the most aggressive ramp-up of immigration enforcement in modern American history. You talked with him about the president's push on illegal immigration. What struck you?
Well, you can really hear that in his comments. They differ from his boss's polarizing rhetoric, and yet they still agree on tough border controls.
Let me step back and tell you that the vast majority of the people that move illegally into the United States are not bad people. They're not criminals. They're not MS-13. But they're also not people that would easily assimilate into the United States. They're overwhelmingly rural people. In the countries they come from, fourth, fifth, sixth grade educations are kind of the norm. They're coming here for a reason, and I sympathize with the reason. But the laws are the laws.
Kelly's known for his hardline thinking on deporting unauthorized immigrants and for suggesting early on that family separation could be a powerful deterrent at the border against illegal crossings, and also for canceling TPS, temporary protected status.
Mm-hmm.
This is the program that allows immigrants to stay in the U.S. from certain countries that have been struck by natural disaster or war. And the administration recently canceled TPS for some 400,000 immigrants from Central America and the Caribbean. But when I asked him about that, what he said surprised me.
I think we should fold all of the TPS people that have been here for a considerable period of time and find a way for them to be a path to citizenship.
A path to citizenship?
Yep.
Rather than sent home?
Well, they were in a legal status under TPS. You take the 100 Central Americans, they've all been here 20-plus years. I mean, if you really start looking at, you know, you've been here 20 years, what have you done with your life? Well, I've married an American guy, and I have three children, and I've worked, and I've gotten a degree, or I'm a brick mason or something like that. That's what I think we should do.
A fascinating interview. NPR's John Burnett, he sat down for a one-on-one.
It's really easy, you know, when, again, I wish he would have played the whole interview, but he's a writer, right? So he's not a media person in terms of radio or television. He's a writer, so he played a few slugs out of his interview. I wish he would have played it long, you know, long format, and because it's a better way. And what you get a chance to see is, you know, and this is what, again, for all the conservatives with what did he just say, amnesty? These people, look, the country's better off getting beyond this. Secure the border, find a pathway to some kind of legal status for the people that are here. They can plead guilty to a crime of entering the country illegally, and if you did that, then you don't get a pathway to citizenship through that. You get the pathway to a legal status in the country, which, you know, for them, fine. Okay, your children, they get a pathway, because they did nothing wrong. They get a pathway to citizenship. Something like that. Something that gets us beyond this stupid debate and allows us to go on to the next issue. I mean, think about it. This is also interesting about Trump and North Korea. What happens if the president and the United States says to North Korea, hey, look, we'll sign just about anything. Okay. We will sign just about anything in order to get you to do away with your nuclear weapons. And here's what we really want to do. What we want to do is we want to create an example to the Iranian people. That is our audience here, okay? So we feel like we know what we have on the table with you, okay? Okay, so what we want to do is we want to show to the Iranian people what they could have as well. Okay, and what they could have as well is what we're going to do for you. Okay? We want to have a great economic relationship. We want to help you and promote business in your country, and we're happy, absolutely happy to go ahead and do that. All right? And in addition to that, we'll go ahead and we'll sign the appropriate agreements, all right, and they'll be give on both sides. And I would even say this. We are willing, down the road, if we can sign an initial agreement, we're willing down the road to look at troop levels that we keep in on the Korean Peninsula. Because if we don't need to keep them there, but that would involve you backing away from the DMZ as well as our troop levels going down. Okay? Along with these, and that may be a subsequent agreement. But what we want to see you be is a peaceful part of the world community. We have no desires to look, if we had the desire to invade you, we would have done it years ago. So, but we want you to be I don't want to say test bed, but we want you to be an example of what can happen, the great things that can happen if we stop this stuff and our audience is Iran. Our audience is Iran.
Ooh.
Whoa. Hey, what are you talking about? Can you imagine? And then once you do it with the North Koreans, you turn to the Iranians and say, hey, get rid of those idiots that are running your country. We have a historical affinity between our two peoples. Our two governments, not so much. Our two peoples, yes. So, get rid of them, okay? Get rid of them. And we can do the same thing for you. Your bread prices, all the stupid stuff that goes on in your country, you can stop it. Whoa. See, I like that. And then what is the United States in the business of? Spreading peace and prosperity. We don't want to run your country. Just don't be a menace to others. Don't be an asshole country. Yeah, come on, man. Don't be like that. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll wrap things up on a Monday edition of All Marine Radio. Coming up here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world, leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Could you whisper in my ear the things you want to feel? I'll give you anything to feel it coming. Do you wake up on your own? I wonder where you are. I want to wake up where you are. I won't say anything at all, so I don't desire.
Montana Man loves that song. That'll do it on a Monday. Butch Neil, mañana. Hopefully the gunner will get his head under control. He can join us again. But interesting, you know, the United States has some interesting opportunities. And, you know, it's. I think there's lessons for, especially young people that, you know, are seeing some of this stuff for the first time. A conservative president. Business is, and always has been, the engine of America, not government spending. Okay? Not entitlements, business. So getting out of the way of business, that's a good thing. That's not a bad thing. In spite of other things you in spite of other things that you've heard. Yeah, getting out of the way so business can do its thing is not a bad thing. And so I think young people are learning that. A lot of young people are learning that for the first time. Another thing I would tell you is the United States is a force for good around the world. Yeah, we always have been. Now, you may not know that because you don't read that. And Christopher Columbus was a bad human being. And all the different people that are oppressed in the United States and what have you. So, you know, you read that and you believe that. But for those of us that have been around the world a little bit, guess what? You won the ovarian lottery by being born American. It lays at your feet. All you got to do is go out and work. Put your head down. You can do great things. Yeah, no kidding. And we have another opportunity here. If we can forge a deal with the North Koreans that's enforceable, that's verifiable, that can lead to good things, right? We send a great message to the Iranians. We're more than happy to do the same with you. But stop with the crazy Persian Empire shit. Stop destabilizing the whole region. Stop it. throw those jackasses out. So, interesting. Interesting opportunity. I'll leave you with this. I saw Muqtada al-Sadr leading the vote getting in Iraq, and I was like, are you kidding me? So I started looking for Al Jazeera to see what they had to say. And you don't have to scroll hard before you find Al Jazeera and what they have to say about Muqtada al-Sadr. All right, here's the story. So I was like, with over half the votes counted, powerful Shia leader Muqtada al-Sadr has emerged as the leading contender in Iraq's parliamentary elections, a remarkable comeback after being sidelined for years by Iranian-backed rivals. While final results in Iraq's election are expected later on Monday, early results show Iran-backed paramilitary leader Hadi al-Amiri's bloc to be in second place, and Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi's bloc is in third. Results from eight provinces are yet to be announced, including Nineveh, which has the second largest number of seats after the capital of Baghdad. The vote is widely seen as a verdict on al-Abadi's tenure and his pledge to be more inclusive of Iraq's Sunni minority. Quote, the country has just overcome ISIL, which has affected the way voters see the election. Everyone is hoping for change, and they see Abadi as a possible force for that change because of his victory over ISIL, according to Ahmed Tariq, an Iraqi professor of international relations at Mosul University. And this is where it gets interesting, okay? The article goes on. Sadr is one of the few Shia leaders to keep a distance from Iran and instead shares Saudi interest in countering Iranian influence in Iraq. What? Sadr sought to broaden his regional support, meeting Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman in Jeddah last year. Remember us talking about that? Sadr made his name leading two revolts against U.S. forces in Iraq, drawing much support from poor neighborhoods of Baghdad and other cities. Sadr rebranded his militia the Peace Brigades in 2014. Sadr leads the Al-Siroun Coalition, which in Iraqi, I guess in Farsi. No. They don't speak that. Means the marchers. That brings together his movement and the Iraqi Communist Party. The coalition has pushed anti-corruption and anti-sectarian campaign. So I saw his name, right? And I thought it was not a good thing for the United States. But then after reading this in Al Jazeera, I thought, wait a minute. He's pushed away from Iran. He's flown to Saudi Arabia, which I remember posting the picture. The picture's a little awkward looking, right? And so he's interested, right, in anti-corruption, anti-sectarian government. That's what Saddam Hussein ran, an anti-sectarian government, not a sectarian. Okay, so it was not going to be dominated by religion. Interestingly enough, 60% of the people in a poll, in a nationwide poll in Iraq conducted in March, said that they viewed Sadr favorably. So, again, I don't know what's going on there. Okay? I don't know what's going on there. I watch these things. And when I saw his name, you hadn't seen anything written about him prior to the election. And all of a sudden, his name pops up as his party is going to win the majority of the seats. Maybe not the 165 needed to be a majority, but they will be the number one party in the parliament and thus have an opportunity to form the government. Interesting. Which I guess is a first step in this month-long series of things that happen. So, interesting stuff out of Iraq that I thought was much worse than it is. I thought when I saw his name that, wow, Iraq just got delivered to Saudi Arabia. Now when I see it, not so much. So, not entirely bad news today. So, with that said, have a great afternoon. This program repeats itself momentarily. We'll see you tomorrow. And again, if you haven't taken a look at the book, What Now, Lieutenant? General Neil is really, in my opinion, an interesting guy because he's a normal, small-town American guy who has this concoction of a pretty unafraid personality, a learner, a lifelong learner. And he joins the Marine Corps and goes from second lieutenant to the assistant commandant of the Marine Corps as an artillery officer, okay? As an artillery officer, yeah. We don't do that very much. So, with that said, have a great afternoon on a Monday. All Marine Radio, out.